The time is 3:37 PM. I'd like to call to order this Budget and Governance Committee, regular committee meeting here at Emeryville City Hall at 1333 Park Avenue in Emeryville, California. Now I will ask the committee secretary to do the roll call.
Member Carr?
Present.
And Chair Welch?
Here.
Thank you.
Item three is public comment. Madam Secretary, did we receive any comment cards? There's no one here with us to make public comment.
No, we did not.
All right. Moving on to item four, approval of the September 18th, 2025 special meeting action minutes. Vice Mayor Carr, did you have any edits to the minutes?
I don't, and I can make the motion to approve those minutes.
And I will second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Item five is our two action items, beginning with item 5.1, discussion and recommendations on city investment policy. Sharon, hey.
Good afternoon, Budget and Governance Committee members. What we plan to do today is have a quick presentation on how our investment portfolio looked at the end of the fiscal year of June 30th, 2025. We'll go through a few economic indicators, knowing that those are a little bit out of date now that we're in October. But Carl Meng with Chandler Investment will walk us through some of the highlights. And then we'll also include, as part of that presentation, of three areas that we would recommend for updating our investment policy. Excellent. Again, we'll have Carl read, go through some of the highlights of our portfolio. And again, from the presentation, we'll then have a discussion about our recommended changes to the investment policy. Again, what we're looking for from this committee would be a recommendation regarding the potential changes to the investment policy. Those policy changes would then go to the full council, likely in November for adoption as part of our annual process of updating our investment policy. Okay, with that, Carl, we'll advance the slides as you direct us.
Thank you, Sharon, and good afternoon, Budget and Governance Committee members. Thank you for inviting me here this afternoon to present the fiscal year end portfolio performance report for the city of Emeryville. If we can go to the next slide, please. I'll start with a brief update of five factors that have changed relatively quickly, actually led to some relatively great outperformance for fiscal year 2024-2025 and has sustained itself through this month. The first, of course, is the labor market has showed signs of cooling. Inflation remains above the Fed's target levels. The real estate market has recently showed also some signs of slowing. However, growth in aggregate has remained strong, and short-term bond yields have really held pace with the now recent and anticipated lower Fed funds rates that we have had. If we can go to the next slide. Like I said, let's start with the labor market. Non-farm payrolls, that is that chart there on the left. It has been slowing. As you can see, that has been descending. Just 22,000 new jobs were reportedly created in August. That was the lowest that we've had for quite some time. It's been trending lower. So the unemployment rate there on the right has also ticked up from 4.2 to 4.3%. This has been the main catalyst, the slowing of the labor market, which, spoiler alert, catalyzed the Fed to lower interest rates at the September FOMC meeting, 25 basis points. If we go to the next slide, please. Inflation has been relatively benign, as you can see, kind of meandering sideways there ever since the Fed started a more aggressive monetary policy regime, raising rates. It had thus far pretty much the desired effect on inflation. We're still not to the target level. If you look at that chart there on the right, that 2% highlighted horizontal line is really where the Fed wants to see the PCE core deflator, and that would be that checkered line. And we'd like to see that below 2%, but the Fed thinks that's on target to get there. And inflation readings, although ticking up modestly lately, have not ticked up, especially not as high given all of the tariff uncertainty that we've had for the last few months. But that doesn't mean that the tariffs uncertainty is not going to filter its way through the economic data. On the next slide, housing market has actually showed some signs of slowing lately. At that chart there on the right is the S&P Case-Shiller 20 City Composite Home Price Index. And August marked, or I should say, excuse me, July marked the fifth consecutive month-over-month decline in home prices, as far as the Case-Shiller 20 City Composite is concerned. As you can see, that's the first time it has been declining since it started picking back up in mid-2023. That brings the overall gain for the index up to 1.82%. So that's the lowest it has been, again, since it started taking off back in 2023. Housing starts have been slowing. Developers have been slowing projects, just given somewhat uncertainty surrounding labor market availability of workers and the inventory levels of houses available for sale at the moment. On the next slide. As I mentioned, although we've had a couple signs of slowing, the consumers remained resilient, and that has driven our gross domestic product GDP up. So for calendar second quarter, we had a 3.8% GDP growth rate quarter over quarter, which was fantastic, much more than most economists in the street had anticipated. And that was driven by large part in personal consumption expenditures. That's, as you can see there, that top row in that table on the left, that was hovering around 2.6%, and it dipped in the first quarter, that's the calendar year first quarter, to just over zero, but then it picked back up to 1.7. You know, net exports also was had kind of a mean revision from that negative 4.7 quarter over quarter to 4.8. So 3.8 is solid growth in our economy, and we're projecting growth calendar year third quarter to continue to be above 3%. On to the next slide, please. So I had mentioned it off the top, the Federal Reserve lowered the Fed funds rate 25 basis points. That is indicative there on the right, that 25 basis points was the first time in a year that the Fed lowered interest rates. And that is reflected in the shape of the yield curve. So short-term yields have been moving lower, and this has been our view at Chandler for the better part of almost 2 years. We had been anticipating September to be the first meeting, FOMC meeting, when they would be adjusting the Fed funds rate and lowering it 25 basis points. And it certainly came to fruition, right, as our view had indicated. Our view calls for another rate reduction in the October meeting in a couple weeks here. of another 25 basis points. So we see a steepening of the yield curve toward year end. Of course, we have a lot of uncertainty for several reasons surrounding the federal government shutdown for one, and of course, the uncertainty surrounding tariffs. Given all of that, we believe the Fed will support the slowing labor market, or what appears to be a slowing labor market, and help with lowering interest rates. On to the next slide, please. So we are in the business of managing bonds, high quality fixed income portfolios, and the bond yields. As you can see, I guess I'll start here on the right with the yield curve. We are coming off the longest 2-year to 10-year treasury yield inversion on record. So that means the short-term yields were higher than the long-term yields, but that line you can see, the dotted line, was exactly a year ago. And the solid line there on the right is current. So we're about 33 basis points higher, and we're in a normalized shape yield curve from the 2-year through the 30-year treasuries. And that you can see that reduction in that very short 3-month area of that right chart, from the dotted line to the dashed line to the solid line. It's on its way down. Now, that has been our view, that the steepening of this yield curve is going to be led by those short-term rates, which you can see there on that left chart as well, with treasury yields, the dotted line and the dashed line diverging from that solid line. That solid line is that 10-year U.S. Treasury, and the other two are the 5 and the 2-year. So seeing divergence there, that's a steepening yield curve that actually has been advantageous for the strategy that we have been utilizing for the for Emeryville's portfolio. And it certainly has been to the benefit of the city. On to the next slide, please. So before I get into reviewing the portfolio performance for fiscal year end, Sharon would like me to discuss just a couple of items that we had been discussing for updating the investment policy. We'll just go in order here. Expanding the description for LAIF, the Joint Powers of Authorities, and LGIPs. These are money market vehicles, and specifically calling out or specifying, I should say, joint power authorities, JPAs, as an allowable asset class within those LGIPs, which is already stipulated in the investment policy. But this is just being more thorough, so it's more in line with California government code by definition. The second revision that we recommend, and this is a very timely one, is adding commercial paper as an allowable investment. The city of Emeryville has not had commercial paper as an allowable investment. And just today, the governor signed legislation that's extending the term limit for CP, commercial paper, from 270 days to 397 days. So that directly affects if the commercial paper provision is approved. It would be certainly beneficial from a diversification standpoint for the city. Also in that same legislation, it's Senate Bill 595. Some of you might have heard of it. It prolongs the provision to allow California government entities that have over $100 million in investable assets to invest up to 40% of their investable funds in commercial paper. That isn't part of the strategy that we implore at Chandler, but that is part of the Senate bill as well. And as you guys have more than 100 million in investable assets, you would certainly be affected. The third would just be kind of a housekeeping measure. We have CMOs are already approved in the approved authorized and suitable investment section of the investment policy. And we recommend removing the language for both CP and CMOs from prohibitive investments, just so it is not confusing to the allowable investments and consistent throughout the policy. Those are really the provisions that we're recommending for this year. And of course, we're always paying close attention to any changes that are coming down the pipe for California government code. And we will annually review the city's investment policy and make recommendations accordingly. Happy to answer any questions, by the way, regarding the updates here. Or, of course, any questions about the economy. I know I kind of skipped over that. And if not, I'd be happy to continue on to the performance report for the portfolios.
Thanks for that quick break. Madam Vice Mayor, did you have any questions or?
Not at this time.
All right, we can keep it rolling.
All right, sounds great. So we'll go to the account profile. Next slide, please. The investment objectives of the city is always first and foremost the preservation of capital, the safety of principal, and secondly, to provide sufficient liquidity for all operating requirements, and then third, to earn a rate of return that's consistent with the constraints, of course, imposed by the first provisions for safety and liquidity and all the parameters set forth, of course, by law, California government code, that is, and the investment policy. The city invests in a shorter duration strategy, so a limited maturity, 1 to 3 year duration bond strategy with a benchmark of the ICE B of A 1 to 3 year U.S. Treasury and Agency Index. I know it's a mouthful. And we invest in very high quality securities, double A rated category corporate issuers, and higher rated other issuers for other sectors as well. On the next page, please. So we, of course, always proud to say we're in full compliance of the law, California Government Code, and of course, the parameters set forth in the investment policy. And I believe we have 2 to 3 pages of compliant material here, so we could probably go ahead the next page. Okay, 2 pages. We're all in compliance, and that's always a good thing. And what you're looking at now is the portfolio characteristics on a consolidated basis for the city of Emeryville. And so on a consolidated basis, this includes all of the reported assets that the city has, checking accounts, money market funds, any fixed income securities that are held away from Chandler as from management perspective. That is reported to us that we consolidate with the rest of our managed portfolios and to on a consolidated basis. So for fiscal year end, you guys had $233,057,256 of total market value financial assets. And that is up from $223,783,000. 321 after a deposit, I believe, from reported holdings and, of course, principal, or I should say unrealized capital gains and interest income on the investment portfolios. The average purchase yield of the aggregate portfolio would be 4.06%. That's right there in the middle of the page. And that was outpacing the market yield of 391 at the end of fiscal year end. The market yields are going to be lower now because interest rates have gotten quite a bit lower. The duration on aggregate is just inside of 1 year at the end of the fiscal year at 0.99 years of average maturity. On to the next page, please. So this is the City of Emeryville's core strategy managed by Chandler. So we'll start with the total market value here at the middle bottom of that table. And essentially, these are the reasons for the changes. You can see from March to the end of June, the portfolio grew from $109,092,000 to $110,465,000. And I think the first place I'm going to mention here is if you look at that second row, that's average modified duration. And that first column is the benchmark. And as I mentioned, we are managing the portfolio to the 1 to 3 year Treasury and Agency Index. And that is a modified duration of 1.76. We are tactically overweight benchmark duration. We have been for all of 2024, especially fiscal year 2024-25 for the city. and that is on a tactical basis within the strategy. And that brings our average modified duration to 1.80. So this is a risk measure. And as we have anticipated the Fed to be lowering interest rates, the yield curve to be steepening, we are taking advantage of capital appreciation being longer duration than the benchmark portfolio or the benchmark index. So for example, when interest rates are go lower by 1%, the benchmark would be increasing in capital appreciation by 1.76%. And we are the cities, the city of Emeryville's in, core strategy, given our anticipated steeper yield curve, we will be or had been increasing at 1.8% of capital appreciation in that lower interest rate 1% environment, which is exactly what happened. So we're actually 125 basis points or 1.25% lower now. So as of September month end, that would be fiscal year first quarter, that strategy and tactical allocation is still benefiting the city. So the average purchase yield at 4.42%, this is certainly much higher than the average market yield. That would be 3.97%. So that's what you were getting, the city was getting as a fiscal year end in the fixed income portfolio was 4.42%. Moving on to the next slide. This is your allocation across your sector distribution. The lion's share of the securities are invested in, of course, the U.S. government in U.S. treasuries at 48%, followed by agencies and then corporates there at just right under 18%. Moving on to the next slide, please. And this is, I think this is certainly worth mentioning. And I should have mentioned this in the portfolio characteristics. You may have or may not have mentioned that, or you may have may not have noticed that in as of March, at the end of March, the portfolio's average credit rating was AAA rated. And as of fiscal year end, June, it was AA plus rated. And Sharon had mentioned to me, you know, it looks like we went down in credit here. Well, you didn't, because if you look at the middle of the page there, there's one glaring difference, and that's Moody's, because Moody's went from being AAA to being AA. And that's the portfolio's rating. And the only reason for that is because Moody's downgraded the U.S. government from AAA. They were the last rating agency that had the U.S. government rated AAA. So they now have them rated AA1, and that would be that credit migration. It had no bearing on any of the performance of the portfolio. That was strictly because Moody's downgraded the U.S. government. Next slide, please. So this is your investment performance since inception, and we have had the honor of managing Emeryville's investable funds since October of 2022. We just hit an anniversary here, didn't we? But I'll go from the right to the left here, because it certainly has been a pretty great couple of years. Since inception, we have had a total rate of return of 4.59%, handedly outperforming the benchmark, which was at 4.33%. And I'd like to remind you that our goal is to match the benchmark, because we're a highly risk-averse fixed income portfolio, investing in only the highest quality fixed income securities. And our goal is to meet the benchmark. And in every metric here, we have outperformed the benchmark. So on a two-year basis, right there in the middle of the page, we got 5.18%, and that's annualized for the last 2 years versus the benchmark at 5.1%. And in the last 12 months, it was certainly a great year for fixed income, when we got a total rate of return for the city of 5.76%, and that is versus the 5.67% for the benchmark. So as fiscal year end, it was a great year. Fiscal year 2024-25 was the best year that we had for many of our clients since 2008. So I think that active management in this dynamic interest rate environment certainly has helped out the city. Moving on to the next page, please. You know what? Actually, that was it. That would be the what I was planning on presenting here today. And aside from that, I'm more than happy to answer questions.
Madam Vice Mayor, did you have any questions?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Carl, for the presentation. Appreciate it. I did have that question about the AAA and the one that Sharon had caught very astutely. Thank you. And thank you for the explanation. So with regard to that, can we go to that slide, please? I think it's the portfolio characteristics slide.
Of the core strategy.
Oh, is that the core strategy slide?
The investment character or the portfolio characteristics for the core strategy.
Yes, thank you. Great. And thanks for explaining that that's the downgrade because the Moody's. Yeah, I see that. And I don't think this is the slide I was actually looking at.
Okay. I don't know which one you're looking at. So you tell me, go back more or?
Oh, I see. Yes. I think you need to go back maybe two more.
There
yes, it is. Thank you so much. Portfolio characteristics. They were not numbered, so I'm sorry I could reference the exact number.
That's probably my fault. They're not numbered.
No worries.
I'll take credit for that.
We got there, so that's fine. So yeah, so that's the Moody's downgrade, and then the total market value in these 3 months has been, it's just like $1,000. Is that just a regular thing? I know that.
Well, I certainly wouldn't say it's regular, and it's more than that now because this is the dynamics of interest rates. So as interest rates go lower, the dollar price and capital value of the portfolio moves in the opposite direction. So lower interest rates, higher prices, higher interest rates, lower prices. So as interest rates have gone down, it is reflected in since our strategy has been to be further out in the term structure, we've been taking advantage of the steepening yield curve, which has led to capital appreciation and unrealized gains in that portfolio. So that's why you went from $109,000,092 to about, right under about $400,000 more just quarter over quarter.
Okay, because I just see the comps between 331 to 2025 to 630 2025. It would have been great to see, what we did over the year. So, but that's fine. I'm sure Sharon has some data that I can peruse at, and then she can explain it to me. But with regard to this, when these curves in inverse yield curve, when the curves change and the market changes, do you change strategy?
We keep the our target duration to the benchmark's duration, and then we tactically shift our duration placement on the term structure according to our view of a 6 month horizon of interest rates. So the answer is yes, we do change the strategy, but we keep it in a channel, and the investment policy specifies a plus or minus 20% of port or benchmark duration limit for that duration drift. And we stay within the parameters of the investment policy.
Thank you. Are there comparables with other cities? Because I think Dublin's probably the only city this year that has a amazing amount of surplus, but I just wanted to know if they are comparable. Do you serve comparable cities, our size, our budget?
Absolutely. I would say that City of Emeryville is pretty much right there in the sweet spot. I think that we I believe we have around 204, I want to say about 200, and let's be conservative and say around 215 individual California government entities as clients, and about 100 to 150 million is pretty average for the assets under management for our clients. To answer your question, the city of Emeryville actually has a more stringent investment policy than California government code. So the parameters that are set forth in the city's investment policy allow us to invest only in AA rated or better category corporate securities. So if I essentially, you know, the investment universe for AA rated securities is much smaller than what California government code allows, which is A rated. It is essentially maybe a fifth of the size of allowable issuers. So, you know, according to the parameters set forth in the investment policy, Emeryville has done great. And I certainly am proud of the performance of Emeryville. Do we have clients of the same size that have investment policies that mirror California government code, which, you know, allows for diversification and more, you know, credit spread to that? You would be surprised how much credit spread you could pick up from AA rated to A rated securities, even though A rated are certainly some of the best, highest quality issuers out there. And again, I think that that is, you know, it's still very comparable when you adjust for the stringent parameters. And, you know, that certainly is, it might be any something to consider revising in the future. You know, Sharon and I have talked about it a little bit. You know, that's something that we'd like to, we could bring that up to the city council and discuss that and the pros and cons even further, perhaps next year at the next time I'm up there in person, or when we're revising the investment policy in the future.
I would really like to see the comps, and yes, I would like to see what A or the California code can do for other cities that we may be able to incorporate in our city. Yeah, please absolutely share that data. If Sharon, you have it, I would like to see it and see how we are doing with that. And who sets the benchmark?
We work with city staff. So this, we worked with Sharon's predecessor and city financial, the finance staff at the city to set the benchmark back in 2022.
What are the benchmarks of comparable cities?
Typically speaking, this is our limited maturity bond strategy. So this is our 1 to 3 year U.S. Treasury and agency index. Our clients, the main benchmarks that of the general strategies that we pursue would be either the 1 to 3 year as you guys are in, or a 1 to 5 year strategy. California government code has a pretty stringent 5 year limit on maturities. And so the vast majority of our California government code compliant clients have that 1 to 5 year limit strategy. So that the longer strategy that I would say probably about half of our clients are pursuing would be that 1 to 5 year, a little bit longer duration strategy. And we also have shorter term strategies as well, as 0 to 3 year US Treasury and agency index, and you know, longer term strategies for different special districts and other entities that have special provisions for longer duration portfolios.
I'd like to see the comparable strategies, if you can share that. And then lastly, total market value, okay, is, okay, I see that, where we are with this. So that's the questions I have for now, Carl. Thank you so much.
We do have a benchmark study available that I can send to Sharon that shows exactly what you're asking, the 20-year historical performance of the shorter term strategy, which actually the shortest term strategy that we implore is a 0 to 3 month US Treasury bill index. And then that 1 to 3 year strategy that you guys are currently benchmarked against. And then the 1 to 5 year strategy and the growth rate of $50 million over the last 20 years and the relative performance. And that's a benchmark study I can send over to Sharon.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I didn't have any follow-up questions. So this is an action item. And so we would just need to approve the updates, correct, Sharon?
Correct, Chair Welch. In the packet, we have a redline version of the policy, and we can pull that up on the screen if you'd like. It's the language that reflects those principles or those three areas that Carl discussed during the presentation.
Yes, I see it. Page 4 has two items. 5 and then 6 just had some red line. Yes, Madam Vice Mayor.
Appreciate it. Thank you. If the questions are not closed, I think that I would like to either do that or discussion, whichever or both, we can do it.
You can ask your questions. I think that would help.
Yeah. So with regards to these, I just want to know if this has been run past the budget advisory committee yet.
Member Gar, because of scheduling, they are meeting on Thursday, and so they will look at the policy 2 days from now.
Okay. That was all. Thank you. That wasn't all. Okay, so that means they will look at something that we've already approved. Or the updates that we've already approved here in the Budget and Governance Committee. Means if we approve it today, that's my question, if we approve it today, which we probably should, because I see what it's just adding the commercial paper and looks like LAIF is being updated. I think it would be a good idea to discuss these items, the red line items on screen one by one, so that the public is aware of what we are discussing.
So to note, Madam Vice Mayor, I know you have you mentioned the Budget Advisory Committee. All of the recommendations from both us and the Budget Advisory Committee would be presented when it is presented in front of the City Council. That's correct, Sharon?
That's correct, Chair Welch.
So the public will be able to both hear our thoughts, and then we'll be able, as the council, to hear the Budget Advisory,
Understood.
Their feedback when Understood. We're discussing it as a council. I think it's fine. I think, Carl, if you're still there, thank you for that presentation.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Just, Carl, if you just wanted to do a quick, if you wanted to bring them up, just one by one, and just if Carl, if you could just do a quick recap on just the three edits, I think that would just be helpful. So we just have that for folks who might be watching at home.
Absolutely. Let me just pick that up real quick here on my computer. If you've got it, that'd
share
be great.
It for us. And then, so the first is page 4. That's with the LAIF.
Absolutely. Okay, so that first line item, that's the Local Agency Investment Fund, that's LAIF. The city has about $68 million in LAIF as of right now. So the city has already invested in LAIF, and the maximum, this is just specifying the maximum amount that the city can invest in LAIF is dictated by LAIF themselves, which currently the maximum is $75 million. So you're within the parameters there, and that's specifying that amount. The instruments, the other LAIF's instruments are, going off memory. So this is just making clear that the investment from the city is within the bounds of that policy, and it's not prohibited in any regard. And any of the, so LAIF is controlled by the state, and the, and what LAIF invests in the LAIF pool is not covered by the investment policy, but that does not exclude LAIF from the, and this is just defining those parameters, as the city has already invested in LAIF and has been invested in LAIF. I would say probably 90% of our clients have money at LAIF. The second provision is the shares of beneficial interest issued by the Joint Powers Authority. That's essentially just being clear with California Government Code Section 53601. And the last, the provision there to no more than 20% of the total portfolio may be invested in LGIPs other than LAIF and JPAs. The reason for that is there are LGIPs that have limits for liquidity, providing liquidity, and there could be situations where the gates for the funds that are invested in different LGIPs may have gates to access that liquidity, and it's just a best practice to limit that to 20% of the total portfolio in the event that you know, those kind of funds are vehicles chosen. The next page would be the commercial paper.
I believe that's page five.
Yes, page five. So this is the commercial paper provision. This is essentially just saying the parameters that the commercial paper that has to be the highest quality, A1 rated by the nationally recognized statistical rating organizations. They have to be corporations with assets exceeding 500 million. And if they have other longer term securities, those securities must be rated A or better in order to qualify as a potential issuer for the allowable commercial paper. That's just another provision of quality control and credit. Again, these other issuers of commercial paper other than corporations are mentioned here. And essentially, this is limiting the quality of credit and the special purpose corporation trusts or the limited liabilities. It's specifying they have to be U.S. organized. They have to have credit enhancements as far as over collateralization, letters of credit, of course, a surety bond, and also rated that highest rated A1 or better. Now, what's interesting here is the end of this. This is what I had just mentioned during the presentation, and I'm glad we're actually looking at this now. So where it's in italics, we're going to have to change this because of the legislation that was just approved today. It was the provision to allow entities with over $100 million had a sunset provision that ended in that was set to end January of 2026. But with the signed legislation, that has been extended till January 1st, 2031. So, as long as we are managing the funds there for Emeryville. I find it highly likely that we would ever invest 40% of investable funds in commercial paper. But that is what California government code says. This also has that the maximum maturity. And it says is not to exceed 270 or 397 because we weren't sure if that legislation was going to pass because it was currently at 270. The legislation passed, so we're going to have to update that. So it specifically says not to exceed 397 days as is stipulated in California government code as of January 1st, 2026.
Madam Vice Mayor, you said you had a question.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chair. So thank you again, Carl. And with regard to commercial paper, we don't have anything in there yet, correct?
You do not.
Okay. And then you will update the language to reflect what the staff, and you will update the language to reflect today's legislation. Regarding the LAIF, maintained by this, what is the reason for redlining the that part where it says current policies of LAIF set minimum and maximum amounts of monies that may be invested as well as maximum number of transactions that are allowed per month? Does that give you more flexibility, or is this something that the state is no longer abiding by? I just wanted to know the rationale behind redlining that part.
Absolutely. That's language that is no longer applicable to California government code. So that's language that has been in the policy as a holdover, which is not applicable with the minimums or numbers of transactions that are that's not a parameter any longer.
Thank you. And regarding the addition of no more than 20% of the total portfolio may be invested in LGIPs other than LAIF and JPAs. Is that additional protection? What exactly does that additional language do for us?
Absolutely. So as I had mentioned, that's there are different LGIPs that are run by different agencies that have gates to that have capital gates. So say they have say a longer duration strategy. Sometimes the LGIPs that are issued by counties or different government entities have strategies that are not necessarily money market funds. And when they do, they have stipulated gates to funds that are invested. So say, for example, you invest your funds into an LGIP that has liquidity parameters or gates, then you invest $50 million there and you have a need to get that $50 million, you have a need for liquidity, you might not be able to get that necessarily very quickly. LAIF or these other money market funds are essentially overnight transactions. And just for that, that's for safety of principle and liquidity to put that 20% total provision on there for LGIPs.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Any further questions or can we turn to discussion?
Yes, absolutely. Further discussion is fine.
I didn't have any additional questions. This is fairly simple. Thank you again, Carl, for walking us through it. I'm prepared to make a motion.
Public comment?
Oh, you're right. Thank you. I'm out of practice. At this time, I'd like to call for public comment. Any members of the public who are not here with us, if you would like to make a comment, you can do so now for 2 minutes. No one's here, so public comment is now closed. I'm prepared now to make a motion. And I wanted, did we need to, in the motion, note the edit for the January 1st, 2031 edit? Just, okay. So I'd like to make a motion to approve the investment policy edits with the additional edit within the commercial paper line, just making that edit to January 1st, 2031.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much, everyone. Wonderful work.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate your time and your expertise.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Always here if you guys have any further questions.
And then, Madam Vice Mayor, the items you requested from Director Sharon, you all can follow up offline. Moving along to item 5.2, review holding one council meeting per month and holding monthly council committee meetings. I know we didn't have a presentation, but I know there were some items from the staff report, Sharon, that you wanted to just highlight.
Thank you, Chair Welch. The agenda packet included a staff report regarding this item. Staff included a small snapshot of comparison with other jurisdictions. These included some jurisdictions that were roughly the same size of Emeryville, as well as our neighbors, Berkeley, Oakland, and Richmond. As shown in the chart in the staff report, of the nine cities, including Emeryville, with a population of about 25,000 or less, five of the cities met two times a month and four met one time a month. However, population is one indicator. However, it doesn't take into consideration the complexity of the individual jurisdiction in terms of the business's necessity, how many items may be on the agenda, and what the jurisdiction prefers in terms of meeting in order to accomplish the business of the respective city. But again, it is a comparison. Staff noted in the report some things that might be considered from an operational perspective. Decreasing the frequency of a meeting from two times a month to once a month would have incremental savings in terms of staff time to prepare for and attend meetings, and the cost to print the agendas, utility costs for running the additional meeting. However, there's other possible trade-offs to consider. For example, a meeting once a month may delay certain agenda items such as contracts from being executed, as they would have to wait for the next month. Ordinances, the second reading would then be the following month instead of the second meeting, so there would be a delay in implementation. Potentially, it may limit staff's ability to respond to new and emerging issues when a meeting has already been calendared. Otherwise, a special meeting would have to be called, and that might cause some delays, as well as logistics in terms of coordinating council schedules. Potentially, the agenda items that would necessarily be on a meeting schedule of twice a month would be consolidated into 1 month, which may make for a longer meeting, potentially less time to discuss complex or lengthy issues, and it would also limit public engagement, as there would be one less meeting for the public to use the public comment period. However, again, this discussion is largely a policy consideration from council, which is why it's being brought forth for budget and governance. In terms of the committee meeting schedule, we did note that budget and governance currently meets frequently, currently meets quarterly as the frequency. Community services and public safety meet every 2 months, and transportation and sustainability meet monthly. Again, as this committee looks at the frequency of council committee meetings, you may want to consider the consistency between the different committees in terms of their schedule. You may want to consider the necessity of needing to meet more often to consider more agenda items. However, the trade-off is that staff would also need time to prepare agenda items, research, prepare the packet. So moving to, say, a monthly frequency you know, would be additional workload. But again, these are just some of the items that we put forth as considerations. And again, look forward to the discussion by this committee to bring forward a recommendation to council. I'm available to answer any questions. My colleague, the city clerk's here as well. And of course, our city manager is here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Madam Vice Mayor, do you have any questions?
And not of the staff. I don't have. We can go to public comment and discussion. That's fine.
Okay. At this time, I'll call for public comment. Seeing no members of the public here with us, public comment is now closed. Madam Vice Mayor, I'd like to give you the opportunity to speak first on the item. It was something that you had brought to council. And so I
yes, welcome you to the floor. Thank you so much, Chair. I did bring this up because at that time, it seemed like a good idea to manage efficiencies. And that was something that was discussed in a study session not too long ago. And therefore, I had brought it up. And I think a lot of that, those efficiencies are discussed in this report. I am actually heartened to learn that one of our Northern California cities in Contra Costa County, Lafayette, also meets, which has a larger population than ours, also meets once a month. And the other cities appear to have a lesser population than Emeryville, or actually La Palma has a little bit more. But I think that they manage their efficiencies well. I was quite impressed with what they had to say about how it's working for them, especially La Palma at the League of Cities. In April, that's when I had brought the item to our council to manage the efficiencies that had been a subject of a study session. I think this would help with managing staff efficiencies, council efficiencies, as well as potentially save resources, time, costs. It would give council more time between the meetings to prepare, and it would give the public the advantage of remembering only once a month meeting versus trying to look at the calendar. And they would be able to do that with regard to special meetings. Our study sessions can be streamlined in special meetings. And I think that's what La Palma does very successfully. Smaller, more operational items can often be handled through staff delegation, and complex topics can be discussed in less formal study sessions. So I think that all in all, it would help with the efficiencies that staff was promoting at the last study session, and I look forward to your comments and discussion.
I think what was highlighted in the staff report is something that makes us a little bit more unique. It's not just about our population. We have a lot more activity that goes on here into respect of the city of Emeryville. We noted contracts. We're small, but we're also a part of a major metropolitan network. And so even though some of the cities who have a very similar population might be able to swing doing once a month meetings, I think with us, because we have so many different irons in the fire, and we're a little, not little, but a lot more busier than some of, I know we're busier than Lafayette. It's a beautiful city, but they don't have the same municipal activity level as us. They don't. And so it would make sense for them to have less meetings because there's less municipal activity. That's my take on it, and that was raised as well in the staff report. What I will say is we do have frequent meetings where we do not have any action items, there's no department head reports, and we just have the consent agenda. I think it would be fine if we don't have any time sensitive items on the consent agenda to cancel that meeting. I think that would, if we can see forward, we have to post the agenda. Obviously, there's legalities around posting agendas and canceling, but if obviously within the planning of the agenda, it's like, hey, none of this stuff on consent, actually needs to be voted on at this exact meeting. This can be pushed to, you know, next month's first meeting, or it can go to the third Tuesday meeting. I think we can cancel those meetings, because if it's not, if there's been quite a, actually, that I can think of this year, we've had about three meetings where we actually didn't have any action items. We just had consent agenda items. We didn't have any special orders of the day. We didn't have anything outside of just approving the consent agenda. And if it's not time sensitive, why does it necessarily have to be a meeting that we're all here for? We're just here to come and vote and then, you know, move forward. So, but I think with us, the complexities of where we are and who we are as a city, it's not just about population. It's about here in our city, we have a lot more moving pieces than some of our neighbors. We're small, but we're not suburban. We're not in any form or fashion a slow moving city. We've got a lot of different things going on. And I think as far as the public participation, only having to remember one meeting a month, I think because it's been done like this for so long, it might throw people off that it's, you know, and then which Tuesday do we pick? Do we pick the first Tuesday? Do we pick the third Tuesday? Which Tuesday, do we just come in the middle and we'll do second Tuesdays? I think it's okay to cancel a meeting. People will be more, oh, that meeting was canceled, because meetings get canceled. But I think staff really drove it home around us being a little bit more high functioning with our activity than some of the others. If we weren't, I would completely understand the drive, but I think there are a lot of concerns around keeping things scheduled as needed. We don't wanna make it where we're holding off on second reading of ordinances. We wanna make sure that we're being efficient still with our municipal activity, even though it sounds as if taking away a meeting might make it feel more efficient. But within the staff report, that wouldn't necessarily be true. It would actually slow down some of our activity because we're then waiting. But I, like I said, I think the compromise might be when there isn't anything time sensitive on an agenda, canceling a meeting might be a good balance, because it's not necessarily pertinent to have the meeting if we are not having to vote on anything.
If you are done, I would like to.
We're having a discussion.
All right. While I appreciate your proposal about canceling the meeting, I just don't see the difference of having one meeting versus setting a special meeting if we need another one during that time where we would need that meeting, which is what exactly La Palma does. And I had a comprehensive discussion with their council members around this to see how it was possible. And they actually have been doing it. They have been more efficient. Their staff has been highly productive as a result of it. They produce, they have to prepare all of the items only once. With regard to canceling the meeting, the staff would still have to do the same amount of work. So it does not promote the efficiencies that I was after when I had proposed this item. With regard to saying that our city is more busy or we have some more items in the other city, that is actually not correct, because La Palma has a lot of items and has a lot of committees. They do have their committee meetings once a month, and that's what promotes the efficiencies, where the committees meet as well as the council meets once a month, and those items can be discussed very efficiently. Regarding public hearings, we last council meeting, we opened a public hearing, which will be again heard tonight. So we are still not delaying anything. We could have done that, or the first reading could have been done last time, but we're going to still do it tonight. So I think it can be easily managed. The proposal that you make, while I appreciate it, I just think that it's not going to promote the efficiencies that I was looking to promote here. What I was really looking to promote was less resources, less impact on the staff, less impact on the council, more participation by the public, by having that one meeting and people can be there for that meeting. So that's what I would, I think it would fall in very seamlessly with the last study session. And this may actually be a solution, a good solution to making those things streamlined, where we could do a lot of business at the committee meetings, then the items come to the staff for action items, whereas canceling the meeting would put in the same amount of work, and the only to just cancel that meeting. What would end up happening is staff puts the same amount of work and we tell them, oh, these are consent items, we have no problems with, we don't have to pull anything, and then cancel. It just does not streamline anything, does not, you know, help with the efficiencies.
Well, I think I would disagree with that, because once it's done, it's done. Once the items have been researched and everything's there, it's whether it goes to one agenda or another, once it's done, it's done. And as far as the public participation, I think Sharon had mentioned this, if we're cutting it down to one meeting, then you only have one opportunity to come and speak. We don't know if we're ever going to have a special meeting. The special meetings come up when they come up. Canceling a meeting means there's nothing time sensitive that needs to be voted on. But that doesn't mean, oh, something might come up, something could come up anyway, and you could still have to have, we could have two, keep the two meetings a month and still have to schedule a special meeting. So the special meeting part, like, oh, well, if we need to, we can just have a special meeting. Well, yeah, we do that now, when sometimes we'll have to have a special meeting. So if we needed to call a special meeting, we would need to call a special meeting regardless of how many times we were meeting. The necessity of the special meeting isn't based upon how many times you're meeting a month. It's if you need to have a special meeting because you need to vote on something because it's time sensitive. So that's not why special meetings are called, because that's not, the onus is on, we have to get something, policy or legislation needs to be decided on or voted on within a certain time frame, and maybe we're not going to be able to meet by then. But that would be happening no matter how many times you're meeting. So, the necessity of a special meeting could happen regardless. We could meet once a week, but if something needs to be, if we've already met on Tuesday and something comes up on Wednesday for it to be voted on, needs to be complete by Friday, we would need to call a special meeting for Thursday. So that part doesn't actually apply. So I just wanted to note that. But I think what I'm hearing from you is there's a concern around efficiencies. In the staff report, it sounds like the efficiencies isn't coming from cutting down the council meetings. It's about the work itself. And I actually would like to, if anyone feels comfortable, as far as staff efficiency, is there anything else that you wanted to amplify from the staff report or just from your own practices? Is it the meetings themselves and the frequency, or is it just sometimes the agendas are more packed than, you know, we have busier months, we have busier weeks? What is the actual efficiency concern around the meeting times or the meeting frequency for you all?
So our process is to meet weekly with the department head team, and we are reviewing the agenda list for upcoming meetings, usually the next two or three. There was a comment that sometimes we're only having meetings where there are consent items. It's discussed at the department head level about canceling those meetings, about making a recommendation to cancel that meeting. The reason they're not is generally because there is a contract on there that needs to be approved so work can start, a contract amendment, a second reading of an ordinance, I can only think of one time in the last probably 9 months that we were able to cancel a meeting because there wasn't truly some business that we needed the council to complete. And that may sometimes fall within the consent calendar. We do look at canceling meetings. It's always something that's on the radar. Do we need to have this meeting? Are there time sensitive items on there? It's just something that we're always looking at. Having the two meeting regular schedule a month allows for, except for January when we don't meet, and August when we don't meet, it allows people to put that on their calendar. And then if we have to cancel the meeting, I want to state that those items, we're looking at the agenda so far ahead of staff. Those items are not ready to go. We're talking about those items before they've been drafted and put on the agenda. That's why the agenda is kind of a living document to us. Until it's published, it's still being worked on. We're still working on items. So when we're talking about canceling a meeting, we're talking about canceling it several weeks out. So all that requires is a cancellation notice, letting the council know. There's no extra work that goes into canceling a meeting, but we're unable to do it very frequently because of the activity and the level of activity. We are almost a full service city here in Emeryville. We just don't have a fire department. Right. And that requires, our redevelopment agency is still really active. Our property acquisition is still very active. So it's those items that have time sensitive deals that need to get in front of council, and council needs to make decisions on them. And that's why we do the two meetings a month. But let me tell you, staff is always looking for opportunities to not have a second meeting in a month. It just doesn't happen very frequently.
Understood. So some of the items I raised around our municipal activity, that is very much what we're looking at. So high municipal activity, it isn't an issue for staff to cancel a meeting because you're looking so far ahead. It wouldn't say, oh no, we're just canceling this meeting out of nowhere. Obviously we've had emergency situations where we've had power outages and things like that. But if we're canceling a meeting, you're looking at it 6-8 weeks in advance. So it's not that you're running around staff. It's like, oh, you know, it's not a surprise. You're looking at it from a scheduling standpoint, long before before the agenda is long before it's complete. So that's not adding more issue or slowing you down in any type of way or preventing you all from getting your work done. But a lot of what I'm really hearing is a big concern is the time sensitive situation. There's tons of, because I've now been here, this is my fourth, almost full fourth year. We have not canceled a meeting yet. Since I've been here, since starting December 2021, we have not canceled a meeting. And so we've had those meetings that I've spoken of where we just had a consent agenda, but obviously you all made the decision, but obviously it was necessary because there were time sensitive issues, and that's why the meeting was not canceled. So you all are looking for ways, you're not, hey, we're just gonna have this meeting just because, but then knowing that if we shifted the policy to say, if there aren't any time sensitive consent agenda matters, it's okay to cancel the meeting. That would be something staff would be comfortable with because of the way you all are planning the agenda, correct?
Yes. Okay. That would be a recommendation we'd make to the city manager to have her contact the mayor. So yes, and in the rules of procedure, the mayor is able to cancel or call a special meeting, so.
So just in case we do cancel that meeting, and again, like I said, all of a sudden on Wednesday, we have a municipal activity emergency that needs us to vote on it, we can call a special meeting, but the likelihood of that is probably, with us meeting frequently, we wouldn't need to necessarily have a special meeting because we're already on top of everything that we need to be voting on time-wise.
Based on the 3 years that I've been here, the probability of that is pretty low. Yes, I haven't seen that since I've been here.
And I have not either.
If you're done, I can say.
Please do.
Yeah, I still think that we should give this a try only because it has been met with a lot of success in the other cities where more and more cities are following that. And I think that based on your own admission that we can always cancel, I think that if it's a living document, if the agenda is a living document, in having it do it once a month and then set a special meeting, to me would make more sense, give the staff more lead time and the council more lead time in determining the deliberative process that may go into items that are put in there for more deliberation. That 1 month lead time can also provide some advantage as to this item can be handled, this contract can be approved within this month. And if there are more contracts that come up that can be done within special meeting, you're saying that here we have not had the opportunity to cancel, which, okay, that's fine, but we have had the, you yourself have stated that the last, there were at least three meetings this year where we had just consent. And our meetings, fortunately, are very short meetings in the city. And I think once a month makes sense to have maybe a little longer meeting. Maybe we could do special study sessions on some of the other days where we don't have the council meeting. And then I think that those models are efficient models, and that's the reason why I put it on the agenda. And that's, I mean, it to me makes sense to have that efficiency model. But if that's not something that this committee can agree, or this budget and governance committee can agree on, because obviously we are coming from very different directions, and I want to promote the efficiencies that have been successfully implemented in these other cities. There seems to be a lot of opposition that I'm sensing to it. And I, you know, at this point really have nothing else to add to what is in there and what has been discussed. I have no questions from the staff because it's pretty clear to me. I mean, I may be here for 1 year less than you, but I've also seen the cadence of the city, and that shows that this can be implemented. It has been done successfully. In the other cities, we may have maybe one or two more study sessions than La Palma does, or maybe one or two more special meetings. To me, having a special meeting called versus canceling, it's the same. We do have special, you yourself said we have special meetings called anyway. Why don't we just call it then in case we have a sensitive contract or we have something else? We will just go down from twice a month to once a month, and potentially a special meeting once a quarter or something like that. But I think that
So Madam Vice Mayor, I wanted to note, I do not think we're coming from different directions. I think efficiency is always on the top of everyone's mind amongst the council and amongst the staff. So we are very aligned on that piece. But I think the definition of efficiency is where we're having a disconnect, because what I'm hearing from staff is that having two meetings allows them to be efficient and stay timely on matters that we need to vote on. Having to call a special meeting in between is not efficient, because if we can already just have it already planned and scheduled out, that to them is efficient. And that feels efficient to me, already knowing we've got this date marked off and we've got this date marked off, instead of then scrambling to try to find a special meeting in which the entire council is then available. My concern is we're going to end up having special meetings that we're going to need to schedule frequently, and then it's going to just end up being two meetings a month, but instead of it being set where it's first and third Tuesdays, it's going to be, okay, this month we had to call a special meeting on the second Wednesday, and then it ended up having to be, you know, the fourth Thursday, and then it's just, it's bouncing all around, and then it's still two meetings a month. It's still the same amount of work, and then potentially we're losing council members off the meetings because everyone's not necessarily going to be available, but you know going in, once you've won your election or you've been appointed, you know where you're going to be expected to be for the first and third Tuesdays for generally the entire year. So I think the built-out schedule helps with the efficiency that you are looking for, but it's not the meetings that are making things, in, if for lack of a better phrase, less efficient. That's not what we were, the goal as far as in the strategic planning session. It wasn't about trying to figure out how we can do less meetings. It definitely wasn't about community engagement, because having two meetings, having two opportunities for people to come and speak, and they know that they can come on the first and third Tuesdays and voice their opinions on the matters of the city, that is an opportunity. Having two opportunities, I think, is always better than one. But I think the special meeting, oh, if we need a special meeting, well, it sounds like, and to April's point, the way we are frequently needing to vote on things that are timely, because as we both said, we've never been able to cancel a meeting that only had consent agenda items, because there's always been something that has been time sensitive. So if they're already looking for those opportunities and one hasn't come up in 4 years, that sounds like that's just not our city. That's just not what we have going on. We always have time sensitive matters. So the first and third, it allows everyone to plan, allows us to have address those time sensitive issues, and allows people to come and have two opportunities to speak to us. And the schedule has been set for so long. I'm worried that, again, we start changing it, people are going to get confused, and, oh, I didn't know there was a special meeting, and then we're going to start, you know, council members aren't all going to be available. I completely respect and honor where you're coming from, and I don't disagree, but I think where we're diverging is what are we defining as efficient?
Thank you for that comment or the argument. I know we are having a discussion or debate here. You're asking me what we are defining as efficient. To me, it's efficient to save the cost to print agendas, to save the utility costs of our building, to save time spent on for of the staff that we pay them for on making these meetings twice a month, where they could spend that time implementing the stuff that needs to be implemented. That same time could go over there. So, I mean, all this resources has efficiencies involved in it. So I think they state them right there. The cost to print agendas, the utility costs, those costs would be potential trade-offs. Okay, that the cost of the what isn't mentioned here is concerning is the resources, staff time. There's a lot of staff time that goes in preparing for these meetings. The staff comes in from all directions to our city. Many of them live far away, some as far as Sacramento, and they come in for these meetings whereas once a month would make it more efficient for them. They would feel more prepared for these meetings. I just think that is a very valuable definition in terms of efficiency. And if you're honoring and respecting what my point of view is, that is my point of view about efficiency. It's not about, we have these time-sensitive contracts. I would like to see some examples of these time-sensitive contracts, which seems to be very vague, which can be done in one meeting and or a special meeting. With regard to opportunities to speak, we have no one here today. We have hardly had council meetings where people show up at every council meeting, and other cities don't stifle that opportunity to speak. they give the people the opportunity to speak, not only just at council meetings, at engagement where there's public engagement, where there are other opportunities to meet council members, as do we. We make ourselves available at these other places in the public to engage with the public. So that to me is not a concern. The concern is really about efficiencies, really about improving how our staff can spend the resource, time, and money. So that is where I'm coming from. And that's the point that I'm trying to make. I don't know how I can stress that more. If you're saying we differ on definitions, I'm not sure if that answers that, the gap between the understanding.
Madam Vice Mayor, I'd like to note, so if we would be scheduling special meetings, that means it sometimes could be within 24 hours notice. So then if your concern is around staff and their time, they're still gonna have to plan a special meeting. Then sometimes with less time and less time to prepare for the meeting, less having a set schedule. I know people come from many places. We all have a lot of, you know, responsibilities. Calling a special meeting can sometimes be more chaotic than just having your set first and third, second and fourth. If I'm expecting that I'm going to have the rest of the week off, but oh, we've got to have a special meeting on Thursday, or oh, now we've got to plan a special meeting, even a week in advance. If someone is not expecting that, that shift can impact staff as well, because special meetings are sometimes they only get, and then you talk about community engagement, the requirement, and Madam Clerk, please correct me if I'm wrong, for special meetings, there only has to be a 24-hour notice, correct? So say only everyone happens to be available that next day, okay, we can agendize it, or within, you know, 24 hours, we agendize it. That's not always a lot of time for the public to be aware of a special meeting is going on. So that's correct, right? It only, for special meetings, it's only 24 hours notice, right?
The Brown Act only requires 24 hours of special meetings, yes.
Right, so that can be a concern. I'm not sure it's going to address the concerns you want it to address the way you want it to be addressed. I'm not hearing from staff that this is an efficiency issue. And again, you're now, you've brought up community engagement. Oh, well, you know, people never really come to the meetings. People do, and I also think people, we're a small city, people see us all the time. They come up, they talk to us. I think we're all very accessible. Like you said, we're all at the Harvest Festival, we're at ECC, we're at lots of things. We show up, we support all types of different celebrations and events all throughout the city. So I think people do have a lot of opportunity to come and connect with us as with council members. We have also members of staff that go to the same events, our city manager, everyone was at the Harvest Festival over the weekend. So I think we're accessible as a city, we're accessible as staff is accessible, and council is accessible. Sometimes people don't always need to feel the need to come and necessarily make a public comment. They might run into you at an event and voice their opinion. But I also, with that being said, cutting it down to one meeting and having potentially tons of agenda items, and then people say we do have a very popular item, and now this is the only one time the month someone can come and make a comment on it, or they want to come and make a comment on an item that necessarily isn't on the agenda, cutting it down to just one meeting a month, that doesn't necessarily expand the opportunity for community engagement. Because say we take it down to one meeting a month, and say maybe for, like you were saying, for maybe we don't even have to call a special meeting for a quarter, so then people are only having one meeting that they can come to a month if they want to come and make public comment. And I do have concerns about the meetings going very, very long, because that also impacts community engagement. I'm a parent, you're a caretaker. people can't stay. Our meetings are efficient and people like them because they don't get drawn out until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. People have to go to work. So yes, they know they can come here at 6:30 or 7:14 and they'll be able to more than likely make public comment within the hour and they can say their piece and they can get back to their family. But if we have a compacted agenda with tons of action items, tons of consent agenda items, and people, you know, somebody's gonna wanna maybe pull something and then that can turn into a discussion. I am personally concerned about the meetings getting drawn out in late into the evening. I'm a parent, I gotta get up, I got kids to take to school in the morning. And yes, I do sacrifice my time to be here, but also that makes it difficult for parents and people who have other family obligations in the evening to be here and participate if we're going to have long drawn out meetings.
So first, let me address the long drawn out meetings. I don't, based on our city's agenda and based on, I think, how long you've been here and how long I have been here, I think that can be managed very easily. To me, I have been told by members in other cities and La Palma specifically that they don't have that long drawn out meetings because they are able to manage this in their monthly council meeting, which gives them more time with their family than two meetings a month, especially if they're coming from, you know, a different, their staff is coming from different, I think La Palma is like our city, but in terms of being a city where other their staff is living in other cities. So I think it gives their staff family time, more family time with one meeting a month, and it'll give us more family time with one meeting a month. With regard to long drawn out meetings, again, I don't think that should be a concern. I remember only one meeting that we've had that's gone up to 10 p.m. this year, and that was unusual. Those could have been divided between the two meetings that we had that month. And you mentioned cutting down community engagement. I don't think that would happen, especially if we have one committee meeting publicly announced and one council meeting publicly announced and scheduled. So that what I'm not proposing that we should have, we have a calendar here of how our committees meet. I think quarterly, every 2 months, beginning January, monthly, transportation and sustainability. What I was proposing, let these committee meetings happen monthly and the council meeting happen once a month, and then the efficiencies can then be promoted. Cutting it down, you know, it doesn't cut down community engagement. They still have it, a scheduled meeting. They still have two scheduled meetings. One is a committee meeting where they can make public comment. Today, no one's here to make public comment. They have the opportunity to do that. And they can make their public comment at the council meeting. So I think the concerns that you are expressing are, to me, very speculative. They are very what ifs. Because we haven't had that. Regarding very like time sensitive contracts, I have to this date, I'm yet to attend a special meeting where been given a 24-hour notice to just discuss a contract. If you have had that, then please remind me if I was here or.
No, we haven't, because we're doing it on the consent agenda twice a month.
Yes, so may I complete my thought?
No, please do what you were asking, so.
Yes, so I would go ahead and say that has not happened where we would have to do that. I don't see why we could not do all of that in one meeting, where all the contracts could be done in one meeting. To me, that's very speculative, and it has not happened. And I don't think it's because we are doing meetings twice a month. Those contracts, you know, are not very time sensitive when I look at those, the consent that they need to be approved now. Some actually come to us after the fact where we approve them because the contract is in. I think there was one with the fire department or some grant getting where we had to approve it after the fact. And I can reference those once I can look at those agendas. So these things, the speculative what ifs, I don't think are enough for me or enough reason for me to, you know, not go forward with this type of a proposal where we could go ahead and cut time, costs, resources in having two meetings a month with regard to 24-hour notice. That has happened far and few in between where we would, why would we not post a special meeting? Yes, it's 24-hour, but why would we do it at the last minute? If we know that there's something that's come up, we do it now if it's last minute, but we don't have to necessarily do it on a special, say, there's a study session that we can't have with a council meeting. What I'm proposing is have that and just have a meaningful discussion, which will give us, and we can schedule it in a way. Another thing that I want to bring to the efficiency point is if there is a special meeting, we can still all be available by Zoom, because we are allowed at least four meetings during the year where we can show good cause and be available by Zoom or by remote locations. So I think it can be done. It can be done in a very efficient way. I just think that there has to be some will, but what if reasons are not sufficient to not try this? To me, that's all I have to say. And I think we can call the item if you want to do that, because other than that, I have nothing more to offer in this.
So I just want to note, so these aren't what ifs, they are actuals. You stating that I'm speculating, you're speculating that we're going to have a special meeting that we would be able to schedule and not only have to do it within a 24 hours notice. What if everyone's only available that next 24 hours and that's the only time we can get in? We don't know. Special meetings are a case of emergency. You can't decide or lean into the future and just say it's going to be super easy just to get everybody together for a special meeting. That's not how that works. Also, I don't know how is it more efficient to then we're still having then three meetings a month. If we're going to, from community service, so community services every other month, I'm on community services, I'm on budget and governance. You're telling me you want to do this monthly and then have the council meeting. So that's still two meetings. So how is that different than just having the two meetings that we have right now? I'm not done. Please let me finish. So saying that, oh, this is you speculating. It's not that's literally how it works. Sometimes the way everyone's schedule works, because then you have to see when everyone is available, when can we get quorum, because we need quorum, because then we can't have a meeting until we can get quorum. So that's also the issue with just, let's just lean in on a special meeting. That's not speculative, that is literally how the law works. We can't have a meeting without quorum. And so when we go out, April's gonna have to do a doodle, who's available for what, when can we do the special meeting? So saying it's just going to be very easy, that is completely not fair for you to say. And that is not speculative. That is how, that's the nature of special meetings. That's why you don't lean in on special meetings, because you don't know, there can be issues with quorum, there can be issues with time, there can be issues with all types of scheduling. And so that's not fair to say it's just going to be very simple. Also to say, well, we haven't had to have a special meeting. Yes, because we've had regular meetings in which we've been able to properly schedule how we address the time sensitive contracts. Their staff has no reason to make that up. We have not been able to cancel a consent agenda only meeting because we have always had time sensitive things that we needed to vote on. Saying, oh, I haven't seen it. Why would they need to lie about that? They don't need to lie about, oh, it actually wasn't time sensitive. They've, April just said, we look for meetings that we don't necessarily have to hold, and we haven't come across that. She's been here for 3 years, I've been here for four. We still haven't come across it. So they're actually doing what you're asking, which is around efficiency, especially around time, especially around staff involvement. They're doing that actively, and it still hasn't come up where they've had the opportunity to cancel meetings. So saying, oh, how are they so time sensitive? I haven't seen it. But she just told you if they wasn't time sensitive, they would have canceled the meeting. And we haven't canceled the meeting. Also, I have a hard stop in 4 minutes because I have to go get little Cruzy for our meeting. So, but I agree. It sounds like we're not in agreement, and that's fine. I think we can still staff, since we can't come to an agreement, I know we still have to call it an action item, but what would be, can the motion be to recommend it to have a general discussion amongst the council members? Could that be the motion?
I would be agreeable to that.
Could that be the motion?
I'll second if that's the motion.
Or if we can, I guess it's our committee, right? We can just do.
Yeah, you can change the action item to take it back to council to have a general discussion, saying that you couldn't come to, you know, an agreement on the one meeting a month, but you'd still like to take it. You'd still like a full discussion at the city council level.
Sure. We have a motion on that. I second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. No information items, future agenda items, the review ordinances on multifamily residential inspections for lead, mold, and substandard conditions. Do we have an update on when we could be seeing that?
Chair Welch, we're still working through that item and 7.2 as well. Hopefully we will be able to give you an update at your next meeting.
Thank you. And then the review for the pet license, that's still working on that. Thank you. Any announcements or member comments?
Not for me.
All right, well, the time is 5:18. This meeting is adjourned. The next meeting is December 2nd, 2025 at 3:30.